dissertation,
delivering information
on wish creation.
We done the research,
we done the math,
we went to Kinko's
and made a graph.
So here's a comprehensive list
of all the ways
to make a wish.
Birthday candles,
make a wish.
Shooting star,
make a wish.
It's 11-11,
make a wish. If you make a wish, make a wish.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another installment of the Benny South Street Chronicles. You just heard a little bit of music by this episode's guests, the Weekend Pilots. There will be more of that later in the show. Before I get started with the interview, though, I did want to just mention a couple of things. I know it's been a while since the last episode, and those of you who kept me in your feed and stayed waiting for a new one, I appreciate that. Any new listeners, if you might have heard me on this week's episode of Battleship Retention, I appreciate you taking the time to check out this podcast. Not all of the previous episodes are currently available in the archive, but I'll be making a point to rotate those in and out. The ones with Tyler Smith and David Bax are currently available. Same with some of the friends of Battleship Retention as well that have been on my show, people like Jimmy Pardo, Jackie Cation, Matt Belknap. Those are all in the archive. So, with that in mind, I've got a number of guests lined up, so I should have new episodes coming in the next several weeks, and hopefully it'll mark a new era of quality for the Benny South Street Chronicles, and again, I appreciate you taking the time to listen. So, let's move right on with my interview with comedy musical group The Weekend Pilots. So, I'm here in the spacious Los Angeles abode of The Weekend Pilots. Gentlemen, thank you for having me. Do you want to take a moment and introduce yourselves?
I'm Jay.
Jay?
I'm Ray.
Ray?
I'm Dan.
Dan. Jay, Ray, and Dan. Now, I met you guys when we were all performing together as part of an open mic that was operated by Heather Turman, a friend of the show, and that was done at Koji's, which is a sushi restaurant here in Los Angeles.
Koji.
Mm-hmm. That has to be over a year ago then, that was going on. How long have you guys been together as a band?
Year and a half, I think, we're coming up on.
I'll put it to you this way. When you met us, we were just starting to perform live.
Okay. How did you come together as a group?
Jay?
Well, when I was 13, I was having my bar mitzvah. I'm Jewish. And
those two usually go together.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wanted to get like custom bobbleheads with my head on them. And I'm placing an order for the guests to take home, like one take home bobblehead for each of them.
Mm-hmm. I'm a few years older than Jay, so I think I was 16, 17 at the time. Oddly enough, we have the same birthday.
Oh, really?
January 11th. Mm-hmm. Not the same year, but the same birthday. And I was working at the bobblehead factory.
Oh, okay.
It was my first job, my family. It's a family business.
All right.
I know it seems very humorous, but it's we take our bobbleheads seriously. And Jay came in to complain about his bobblehead order because
I'll be real with you. They looked nothing like me.
It looked like him.
Mm-hmm.
It was. We do the laser imaging, and it was.
If it looked like me, then
whatever, man.
Then the next part of the story wouldn't make any sense, and they didn't look like me. They actually looked. Exactly like me. Yeah.
Oh, like, so they look like...
They looked exactly like me. Like
I mean, I disagree, but that was the consensus.
Yeah.
I'm trying to predict where this story is going. I'm like, did you decide that you needed bobbleheads for some reason? And then they said, hey, we've got a surplus.
They approached me with bobbleheads. I've had them over a barrel at that point.
Okay.
I had a bunch of bobbleheads that didn't look right. They looked like me. I didn't really need them. I got them for pennies on the dollar. It's basically where that story ends.
Okay.
His bar mitzvah wasn't for a couple of years.
That's thinking in advance.
He bought them.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And we all met. And now we're in a band.
It's a sore spot.
It's like something out of the golden age of Hollywood. So I'm just looking around the apartment. I don't know if I've ever seen you guys perform at a gig where you actually used the drum kit.
Well, yeah.
So who played? Is it just there for atmosphere, or does one of you actually play the drums?
The drums get played.
Okay.
Dan does most of the mundane things, like play instruments.
Okay.
Jay and I are, I guess, the entertainment
portion of the band.
The wow factor.
The wow factor, if you will. Like, you've seen...
You're the sizzle, he's the steak.
I mean, that's pushing it.
Those are your words, not ours.
The pan.
Dan is a musical genius and can play almost any instrument that I know about, and so he's quite adept on the drums, but usually he's too busy playing the guitar to bring it out to the live show. I did bring the hi-hat cymbal out last week, and I was brushing that with a metallic cymbal brush.
Nice.
Yeah, we did a rendition of a song we like to call Jazz Cat.
Which is also the official name of the song.
Yep, also the official name of the song.
You won't find it on there.
Oh, okay.
On the new album is what I'm referencing.
Nice. Yes, I've got it right here in front of me. Yeah. It's 8 tracks, very retro.
Thank you.
Is it available on 8-track or just on CD?
That'd be nice.
I'd like to have it on vinyl
and cassette. I'd like to one day have it on cassette.
All formats would be nice.
Right now, just CD and also electronic download. WeekendPilots.com. You can get it for free.
Oh, okay. Normally, I save the plugs till the end of the show, but
that's
hey,
not a plug. Sorry. That's a gift.
It's a gift. Yeah. Gift to the world.
All right. WeekendPilots.com.
That was our album for free to all your listeners. You know what? Edit that out. I'm taking it back.
No.
I'm gonna put it back in. WeekendPilots.com.
So if you guys will allow me, then indulge me for a second, I wanted to ask Dan. So how did you first get interested in playing music? Lifelong passion or just?
Music started for me, I was about 8 years old or so. Mm-hmm. My whole family played something. My brother had just picked up drums. He's a couple years older than me. My dad already had been playing guitar in the 70s and 80s in college like they all did.
An amazing guitar player.
And my mom played keyboard, and I was like, you know what? I had like some family band fantasy. And I was going to start a family band. I was going to play bass. So I started playing bass. I was 8 years old. They told me my hands were too small.
Just like Lisa Simpson.
They told me my hands were too small, and I couldn't play the bass, but I said, fuck you. And I played it.
That's a mouthy 8-year-old.
I played it, yeah.
So then, what drew you to comedy then? Why did you make the decision to focus your attention in that direction?
Always.
And I'll open that up then to the rest of the panel as well.
Always loved comedy. Was as a kid, I had, I was...
In a comedy rap group.
I did. That's later. As a kid, I listened to like a lot of Weird Al. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of Monty Python's songs like on CD that I would listen to like over and over on road trips and stuff. Always drawn to comedy. I had a bunch of like old cassette tapes of like Amos and Andy and Abbott and Costello and stuff that I used to listen to, like a bunch of old radio shows. So comedy's always like been there somewhere in the back of my life. And these two super funny dudes wanted to start making crazy songs.
It's pretty amazing how our comedy interests, particularly like our musical comedy interests, overlap. Mm-hmm. Like all of us have sort of Monty Python in our background. And then just interesting eclectic stuff that I don't know, that's like, so for some reason our parents introduced us to like, you know, BBC stuff and then also like older comedy stuff. I mean, I guess like the Stooges, like everybody kind of grew up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of overlap in the stuff that we grew up with, Weird Al as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, comedy music always just seemed fun, interesting. I was into ska music as a kid, which, and then punk music, stuff that didn't take itself too seriously. And of course, the comedy bands that I guess were around, which really when I was growing up was just Weird Al. Monty Python had some comedy music. Mm-hmm. And then later, I guess the Tenacious D a little bit. Bands that didn't take themselves so seriously, like Weezer, et cetera.
Jay?
I just like the sound of people laughing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've liked it since I was a kid.
Did you ever consider just doing straight stand up, or did you always want to do it in a musical context?
I've done stand up comedy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like around town or where?
I did it. They made him stop doing it. It's too good.
I remember that meeting.
You were there. I was doing comedy stand up. When I was doing stand up comedy, it was mostly in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. Like, are you're living in LA now, but obviously you're not a Los Angeles native. Are you guys from other parts of the country then, or?
I am from New Jersey.
Arizona.
Oh, Arizona. Okay.
Yeah, we're both Ray and I are both from Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Did not know each other.
Met each other.
So then how did you all come together? I mean, did you come from...
Are you saying that our first story wasn't a true story?
No, I'm just wondering how you all end up together in a town where the main industry is bobbleheads.
Yeah.
What led you there? You stuck out your thumb and said, take me to Bobblehead City?
No, okay, so the bobblehead thing's a joke.
But I was trying to yes and you, man.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
You went the furthest with it than anyone.
Yeah, I wanted it to be true. Yeah. I was desperate for it to be true.
The reality is that I worked in Los Angeles across the desk from Ray. We were the marketing department of a small startup company. And so usually the way it would go is that during the day I would be doing something kind of intense and something that would take a lot of my attention. And Ray would say, Jay, I need you. And when I looked up,
Majie's looking at my belly.
His belly's out right now.
Pulling up your shirt.
For all of you podcasters at home.
I do have my belly out.
And he would say, Majie, look at my belly.
Jay was very inspiring to me because I'd always wanted to do stand-up in Phoenix. There's not a lot of outlets in Phoenix for anything cultural. If you're in Phoenix, if you're living in Phoenix now, you're listening to this, leave. Move to L.A., move to New York, San Francisco, move somewhere else where there's culture.
We do love Phoenix, though.
Yeah. But I love it. It's my home. Right. But, for somebody that wants to get up and do stand-up, there were some outlets, but I was always afraid to do it, and Jay had done it in New York, and we were just talking about this today, he had told me about Upright Citizens Brigade, UCB Improv, and I was like, a school for comedy? Hmm. There is such a thing? And that's how I talk normally when I'm not on the podcast.
Right.
And he was an inspiration to me, and just like to find somebody that you kind of riff with. Like, we would riff on our lunch breaks, and we would just walk, and we would kind of create characters in our walk. Well, things in our walks would just, in our old neighborhood, Miracle Mile, there used to be this angry possum. There was a real possum that was just on a doorstep at night. He would be walking around. He would just be fuming. I don't know what he's so mad about. He's a possum in Miracle Mile. Life can't be too bad.
Yeah.
So we would joke about these kind of shared characters that we would run into in our life and then also create in our universe. And it bonded us together. We realized that we both enjoyed each other's comedic company. Yeah. Not so much as people. But it's comedically, yes.
I didn't even know that it was going to be a band, actually. Ray just invited me over to Dan's house in Silver Lake at the time, and we would go over, and the plan was just hang out and write jokes and stuff, but we never would get around to actually recording any of the sketches that we would write, but we would always end up with a theme song.
Okay.
So we just ended up with enough theme songs that we released this album, really, and that's... And one day they looked at me and they were like, you know, you're in a band.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, actually the first one we ever recorded, Business Bear, was a theme song for a YouTube sketch or just a sketch that we
never filmed.
Doesn't exist yet.
Doesn't exist.
It may never exist.
It will.
There's a lot of
it will exist.
To exist.
Good, I'm glad you guys.
It will exist.
Good.
Yeah. And Dan was in a band called The Sextronauts, a great band, and I met him through just seeing music around town. And we bonded. We lived together.
And so now all three of you live together in the same loft.
Yeah, we do live here.
We do. We live in this space together.
This is the Weekend Pilots' not-so-secret headquarters downtown Los Angeles.
Right. I don't want to say that it's like the Monkees, but it is a little. I hope you're not offended.
Yeah.
No, I saw them over the summer live. It was pretty cool.
Oh, really? They're still playing?
It was the 45th anniversary tour. I mean, it was Peter, Mickey, and Davey, because Mike doesn't like to tour. But then I got to see him at Largo.
Hey, the Monkees. Cool. Yeah. How are we like the Monkees? And no, I'm not insulted, but I am curious.
You live together, and you're a band, and you have a certain comedic sensibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They would always go on like cool little Scooby-Doo adventures as a band.
Do you guys do that? Do you have any aspirations to do that?
Scooby-Doo adventures?
Yeah.
Always. Every day of my life.
We wrote a Scooby-Doo.
The mystery song?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Investing all my money in the mysteries. Boom, boom, boom.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. It's about investing all your money. In these turbulent times, where should you invest your money?
Mysteries.
Mystery novels.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like the concept of
mystery.
On Scooby-Doo, they would always encounter
investing our money in actual mysteries.
Yeah, don't.
Oh, the actual... It's still in the conception.
Because the people that had the schemes, it would always be this elaborate scheme where they probably would have just been saving the money rather than buying the costume.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, like that could be quite a way to pay off. It could be much more profitable than, say, an IPO.
Right.
Whatever that stands for.
So, I completely lost my... Oh, I was going to ask, so what made you decide to get up and perform in front of people as a comedy band?
This guy, actually.
So Dan was the driving force there? I'm sorry, Jay. I'm sorry, Jay.
It's okay. I'm not mad at you.
Okay.
I mean, there's no point in sitting around entertaining each other forever when the plan is to entertain other people.
Mm-hmm. I was frightened to do it. Jay had done a lot of performance, and he was like, we got to see how this plays.
Where was the very first place that you went up?
It was in
Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf
on Ventura. You know that mic?
I don't.
It's a good mic. Soapbox
Sessions. Yeah, up in Encino.
Okay.
It's a mic that I used to go to with a buddy of mine. We used to play like old folk tunes, and it was like it's a good crowd.
They get a good crowd.
They like a lot of regulars. People come back. Very supportive atmosphere.
Yeah, just like comedians watching comedians, but there's like.
There's people that are there to like watch people perform. It's kind of a cool spot.
They're extremely supportive of each other.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's always nice to find an atmosphere like that. Now, I have to ask, your signature look as a band is the pink jackets that you wear.
That is correct.
Were those there from the very beginning? Was that part of the original concept, or was that something that you encountered and like you were in
a meteor hit the bobblehead factory.
And inside the meteor were three pink jackets.
I imagine, yeah, the fog and the light that shone upon them when that meteor, I guess, door opened.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you've seen the new Superman outfit for the movie, but man, they can't do anything right.
No, I agree with you. They messed it up in the new 52 comics and now the movie.
Are you a Superman fan?
I'm a general comic book fan. I keep abreast.
So the truth behind the jackets is this. We had this idea, we're a band now, we need some pictures. And so we were going to get a Facebook picture. Have you heard of the Facebook.com?
Yes.
It's blowing up these days.
There was a movie about it like a year or two ago, right?
Sorry, I'll save the plugs for the end of the show.
Oh, sure.
Facebook, I have some investment in, so to keep it totally...
You own most of the stock, I believe.
Transparent, I own most of Facebook.
Oh, okay. I figured from the surroundings that there was the money coming in from somewhere.
Yeah.
Humility is the best way to make a pie.
We wanted to get a Facebook profile picture, and so we went out. You know those picture people at the mall, and they'll take your picture, and it's just horrible. They'll take it with your family or something, and they're always
bad. So horrible, it's good.
Yeah. They're bad in a special way.
Yeah.
Well, we were gonna go get one of them, and we were shopping for
the ugly sweaters,
outfits that we were going to wear in this absurd picture. And we actually got all the stuff. We're going to return it afterwards. But we got all the stuff for this photo, and we went down to get the photo. And we found out that as horrible as those pictures are, they're not cheap.
Very expensive.
So we couldn't afford that session. So we went to return all the clothing that we'd bought for the shoot. And on our way out, walking through the women's section, Dan was like, guys, look at this.
That's Sears, by the way.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. I don't mind.
And then we have
Sears. They can use the help.
Yeah.
We
your catalog.
We called up our buddy Mike Miniman, who owns a camera and has a nice eye for photography, and he snapped some shots of us in the jackets, and we threw them up on Facebook. And
that first day that we wore them, people were just catcalling us and whistling at us downtown. Like we were stopping traffic, literally, in these pink jackets.
It was crazy for a little bit.
And we were like, this is a good decision.
This is a good thing we did.
We've gotten so used to wearing it. Actually, just recently, you know that new Zooey Deschanel show?
Yes.
Whatever it's called, the new girl or whatever. They filmed the establishing shots, I guess that's what it's called, for the building.
Like, we're famous.
This is the building.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, they're on a soundstage, but we were walking outside to a show while they were filming. And so in the second episode, like very briefly, at like 18-minute mark, bottom left of the screen, you can see three guys in pink jackets just walking, talking, you know, for like 2 seconds.
That's pretty cool.
One of our neighbors called us and said, you guys are on TV.
So I've been performing all my life as my national television debut.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
We made it.
You can watch Zooey and his new girl Wednesdays. I'm just kidding. I don't even know what it's on.
Well, Fox needs to help too. Fox and Sears. I don't mind giving them free plugs.
Sears.com. Man.
So were the jackets part of the, like, were they there when you did your first set? Or
they weren't there for our first set, but very soon after.
All right,
we did the first set, then we said, okay, we did a set, it's time to get a Facebook profile picture.
Got it.
That's the way that it goes.
We had no pictures. Well, let's remedy this. And then the jackets.
So then how long were you performing before you decided to, you know, to put together an album? Or did the album come first?
No. Most of the material on the album was painstakingly worked out live in front of crowds. Mm-hmm. And we made the album pretty recently. This is our, okay, so Ray has put in front of you actually our pre-EP EP, the world's finest album in a sock.
Which comes in socks.
Oh, nice.
And the track list is on the back.
So we started out with that, and then this is actually our second CD venture, if you're counting.
Okay. And this was about the world's finest album in a sock, which is unpurchasable at this point.
So this is a collector's item.
This is the last one in known existence. A lot of people mostly just use the socks.
It's true.
They're very
so
happy
if you go on eBay, you'll find listings for your album with socks and without socks. Socks in worn condition.
Eventually.
Yeah. You can't get it with the socks and the album together in this stapled, the tag stapled on it.
That's a heavy-duty staple, because that's got to go through two pairs of socks.
And we made this about six months, or three, somewhere in between 4 to 6 months after performing together. Mm.
Okay. So I'm curious then, when you show up, do you identify yourselves as a comedy band? Is that right, or do you just say, oh, okay, we're a band, and then the comedy is a pleasant surprise?
It's hard to explain that those two words go together.
It's very difficult for people to comprehend those two words together.
The best thing to do is just to tell people that we are comedians and not let them know that we're anything else. Because the minute you let someone who's running a show know that you have an alternative style of comedy, it's still comedy. It's not stand-up comedy directly. It's alternative. It's comedy. You can put it on a stand-up show. The minute you let someone who's running a show know that, they freak out. They're like, we either need to put them on first or last, or we can't have them on. It's just comedy.
So we use like comedy music or comedy band, but you have to give people a point of reference. You have to say like, because they'll go, what? Comedy? You have to say, you know, like Flight of the Conchords, Tenacious D. And if you're lucky, you'll strike something that they're familiar with, and then they'll understand what it is.
Have you had the experience where you show up and everybody's just sort of a straight band, and then the audience doesn't know what to make of you guys, or do you usually get a pretty good response?
We don't really perform on shows that are purely music shows.
Oh, okay.
We have at the Viper Room before, but all of our fans were there to see us.
Yeah, that was our CD release party, so I wouldn't consider that a pure music show. I would consider that the Weekend Pilots CD release party, is the way that the night was framed for them.
Anyone that was there to see normal music, we entertained their faces off,
right,
and they were just happy that we were there.
Okay. So do you find any, I want to put this in context, there is a certain type of comedy snob that will look down on musical comedy as a novelty act. Have you encountered that at all?
No, I've never heard
of
that.
No one said that out loud to you?
Okay. No.
I've heard rumblings during shows, I'm not going to name names, but I remember distinctly playing a show once and somebody said something like, oh, I have to go on after that. Something expletive comedy band. And I don't know if I ever shared that with you guys.
No, I never heard
that. It was one
of
our earlier shows.
Okay. I didn't mean to create any.
No, this is it's a true story.
I've heard people say stuff like that too before. My assumption was always, shit, I have to go on after that? That was fucking crazy. How am I ever going to top that? That's what I always assume.
Newsflash, comedy is something that evokes laughter. That you don't have to define it further than that and say that there's a good kind and a bad kind. Somebody's going to go up and their craft is prop comedy and they're going to destroy a room and tear them apart. I'm not going to look down on them.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. If the end result is laughter, that everybody in the room had a good time.
More often than not, I don't want to embarrass myself on your podcast, but I'm not embarrassed of it. I don't think people realize the depth of certain comedians that they might call sticky. Or what was the word you used?
Novelty act.
Like Gallagher is a fantastic comedian in my opinion. I'm well aware that most people probably think he's just the guy who smashes the watermelons. They should watch some more of his stand-up. He's actually an excellent comedian, and usually people who are latching on to one thing and bashing it are covering their own insecurity.
Yeah, I agree. I watched a lot of Gallagher when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Also listened to a lot of old-time radio, so it's nice to know I wasn't the only one who did that.
No, you were not the only one.
Yeah. When I got here, before we started recording, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get to that part yet. I wanted to see what is the scene like, because, you know, I've sort of slacked off in which rooms I go to and how frequently I try to go up, but you guys are the only comedy band I've seen.
Is there a lot of competition in your niche, or like, do you know other comedy bands?
I love the concept that it's competition.
Like, I'm sorry, we're all trying to
destroy each other.
But do you find yourself ever going up on the same bill as another comedy
band? Yeah, we're actually producing a show pretty soon here where we're playing with a lot of our friends, and our friends that you just met, the guy Zach that you were speaking about, he's in a band called Ogre Mage. We just played their CD release party at the Silver Lake Lounge. And we're doing a show with all of our friends that are comedy. Like, we all kind of help each other, know each other. Every time we hear about a comedy band, we try to seek them out and support them.
The smartest thing we can do is share our fans with each other. If we can put on a show and they bring out their fans and we bring out our fans and we entertain, you know, everybody who's there, and now their fans know about this other thing that they might like, it's actually the opposite of competition. So we try to cultivate that.
You're right. I'm picking my words poorly. I don't want
to. No, and I'm not attacking you, but that's just the answer to your question. Is that absolutely. There's somewhat of a scene that's out there, and we're trying to be part of it and help even form it and cultivate it.
I think big names like Lonely Island, Flight of the Conchords, like as of late, you know, have made it more. People even like MC Chris have made it more possible for somebody to think, oh, I could start something that's a comedy band or that is, you know, some type of comedy. Reggie Watts, Dimitri Martin, like even Zach Galifianakis, like dabbling in piano. I think comedy music has become something a little more acceptable, and people have sort of people to idolize and want to achieve. Or even like recent celebrities like, you know, Bo Burnham, and YouTube also really helps out with getting that type of comedy out there.
Why do you think that comedy music resonates with people?
Comedy and music have been having sex since vaudeville, man.
They get it on for a while.
Yeah, comedy and music go back further than that. They go back to ancient Greece. But it's two things that people enjoy put together. It's like when you melt chocolate chips on top of pancakes. It's not like you're like, oh, I don't like pancakes anymore. I don't like chocolate chips. You're like, nah, I got both of them at the same time. This is fantastic. You know, sit back, relax. Be entertained. Here's a couple of your favorite things that entertained you. Music and laughter.
Right. Yeah, I think we've learned a lot in like the composition of comedy music. I mean, Dan, especially being the musician, of just using like sounds or changes in music to elicit laughter, you know, which is
as a stand-up, and I know I've seen your act, and I like it, by the way, for the record. Podcast listeners, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Stand-up has rhythms, right? I know you've experienced that. And so jokes have rhythms, and it has been really interesting discovering that and how they play together. I think that, Dan, I've called you on the phone just like excited to talk about that before back at club.
Yeah.
Just called them up, just figuring that out. And it's a constant evolution. Here's an example. Make-A-Wish on our album here. It was a song that's very difficult because there's a lot of actual punchlines in there, and then because we were writing a song and we were new at this, the song has to musically continue. So the next lyric will cut off the joke, in my opinion. Like, if I was doing stand-up, I would have let the joke breathe, whereas here, you're just hitting the next one. And then recently, because we just didn't have the track with us, we performed it without the track again, which is how you saw it. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
But we did it at Koji with no music because the sound was just getting messed up, and we just thought it would be easier to just forget the sound, just do it.
Right.
The two specific performances of Make-A-Wish that I'm talking about, I remember particularly resonating with the crowd more so than other performances. So still discovering things like how to really work with the rhythms and the flow of music and work with the rhythms and the flow of a joke and put them together in a perfect way. It's been a fun little exploration.
Yeah. You're still developing the process?
Absolutely.
Always discovering new and exciting things?
Well, yeah, any of those songs that's on the CD, some of those have evolved since they've been put on that album. And we're always open to changing any existing song, and as we develop and write new songs and find, you know, new things that we want to sing about or rap about or different formats. We just bought a bunch of new gear.
Yeah, we did buy a bunch
of new gear. Using. Yeah.
So like what? Like a
theremin? We're leveling up. We're leveling up the live performance. I don't want to make too many promises.
Okay.
One day.
But I will say there's some looping involved. We're going to like start layering stuff on top of other stuff. Hopefully introduce some more
maybe some more instruments.
And you get some improv in there, so we're sort of creating some beats live on stage eventually.
Yeah, maybe cool. Something a little more jazzy.
And I think when you saw us back in the day,
we were
using the iPad sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to just experiment with something else that we could do.
If you can work a didgeridoo into the act, I'll be really impressed.
I love the didgeridoo, man.
That'd be cool.
I can play the didgeridoo.
You can't be sad listening to a didgeridoo.
No, you can't. Those crazy like bird noises that they do in the background, those are the fun part to do.
I saw Incubus do a show way back, and then after the show, the crowd's shouting for an encore, and they came back out and they just played the didgeridoo for like 6 hours.
Did the crowd like it?
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's amazing.
It was awesome. No, they were just rocking it out for like what felt like forever. It was like another show, the didgeridoo portion of the show. Nice. It's also a great word. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
It's a fantastic word.
It is. I wanted to ask about something that we briefly touched on before we started recording, where you were talking about some other guys that you put forth the idea that they're almost too good a band to be a comedy band.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I probably chose my words poorly, but our friends Ogre Mage are an amazing. I would refer to them, I guess, as a fantasy metal, but not even metal, but a fantasy.
They have a song where they're singing about joining the Horde.
Okay.
And the name of their band is Ogre Mage. Enough said. Check them out.
We're big D&D nerds, big fantasy role-playing nerds, and these guys sing songs that, if I had been 12 years old, it would have blew my mind. Like I would have.
No irony, just sincere appreciation for the
totally. The topics of the song was everything that my life was, and a big piece of me still is. Like it's all music that's basically in a ballad format, like Meatloaf, if you would. The singer's amazing, Zach's amazing, the whole band's amazing, and the. I enjoy it for music, but I guess I also see the comedy in it as well.
I've joined the Horde.
Yeah,
I'm joining the Horde.
I don't know. I'm not a big D&D fan. Are you talking about Horde? Is that a D&D thing or like from the He-Man mythos?
He-Man and anyone?
Right now, I'm talking specifically about a Horde of ogres.
Oh, okay. But you say Horde, I think Hordak.
But I don't know. We have to ask the band. Orcs frequently hoard up. A horde is a mentality.
Okay,
and it's a monstrous mentality, but I mean, I'm sure it's an extension of man.
And World of Warcraft, the evil side is called the Horde, I believe, as well.
And when you join a horde, you're part of something.
That's
true. You know what I mean?
Something larger than you.
Something big.
Something generally bad.
Yeah. But, it's an exciting concept, and it's an exciting song. I don't appreciate the song from a perspective where I'm sitting back going, oh, this is like ironic or funny that they're referencing the Horde. I'm like, I'm in!
Yeah.
I'm in! It moves me to join the Horde.
Yeah.
So, I'm in.
Now, that moment just now, Jay, where your eyes got really big, that was one of, I would say, probably the most passionate portions of the evening so far. And that's one of the things that I like about your guys performing is you have such commitment. It's really cool and infectious to watch. And I've seen that. Koji's, they didn't get a great turnout, but the people that did, you definitely resonated. I'm gonna challenge you a little bit here to maybe pick your favorites. Of the 8 songs on the track, which ones individually would you say is your favorite one if you had to pick?
Ooh, that's like picking what my baby's gonna have several.
Yeah.
Is my favorite baby, chop it in half, I guess, kick solid.
You're reminded those are the.
I like to look at them. I like to remember that this thing exists.
My favorite Weekend Pilot song is not on the album, so that's an illegal pick.
Oh, no, tell me about it.
My favorite Weekend Pilot song is called When I Look Into Your Eye.
Okay.
He's never seen it in a thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
It sounds exciting. Like, eye is a very specific choice.
Eye is a specific choice.
Very specific. Okay. Very specific.
It's a love song. Specific.
All right. Well, I won't force you to go into too much detail. I will keep that in my mind as a
you've already appreciated
appetite
it. You've already begun.
Yeah.
You listened to the language and you enjoyed it and your wheels are spinning.
Yeah.
It's begun.
It could go in any one of a number of directions.
Wait till you see it.
I can't.
You'll like it.
I'm very excited now.
I would say from the album Melon Melon remix. Lonely little fruit stand. One honeydew, 600 cantaloupe, melon, 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 melon. Particularly because of what we do with it on stage and what we've done with it, we have a dance sequence. It's such a different note. I think that when it got incorporated into our act, just changed everything for our performance. So I can't detach the song from the performance. Like when I listen to it, it took us a while to choreograph to the whole song, but now it's just like second nature.
This has come up a few times in the interview. I was going to say it earlier. Basically, what we do is we write material that's a little too hard for us to perform. We write stuff, and we're like, and this is where the big dance sequence is. And then we look at each other, and we're like, does anyone know how to dance? And so, you know, then we learn it. And it's not, and it's with that, and it's with Melon Melon for sure. Like, we push ourselves. It's with Make-A-Wish, just as a song. Like I said, I have no musical background. Make-A-Wish is just difficult to perform lyrically, harder than I was able to perform it. So part of it is just writing stuff that's too difficult and then figuring it out, which it's okay because you're a clown anyway. So if you're on stage and you mess it up or something, then that's just a piece of the reality of that show. So, but it's also allowed us to get pretty good at some of this stuff. Like, I think we should probably go back and make it harder, because we've got it so down. That's I can do idea. It without thinking about it. That's so that idea. Probably means we need to revisit it.
Well, that leads to the thing that I was going to ask you, the difference between, say, favorite song and favorite song to perform.
Ooh.
So, but if they're one and the same, I guess it's a moot point.
I do enjoy the song very much, too. Like I said, it's hard to detach the experience of performing it. But it's a great song. Yeah. Dan took a song that was an acoustic song, I think, that you saw, where it's about melons, and Jay and I are sort of performing. And some of our songs, again, because Dan is the musician, and you know, Jay and I have a limited range of instruments that we can play. Jay's leveled up recently and learned how to play the hi-hat with jazz brushes.
Nice.
So we kind of have to find a place where we fit in a live performance. And Melon Melon was one of the first songs that we performed live. And Dan took that acoustic version, and with his skills as an audio engineer, turned it into an amazing electronica song, which I enjoy listening to. In the same way I talk about Ogreminch, just as a song, and then appreciate the other levels of comedy in it.
This is something I noticed in high school. People like to watch a group of young men dance in unison.
It's true.
That is something that people like.
Now, was this based on your firsthand experience?
No, I'm thinking of this. I don't know their names, but there was this group of Asian brothers at Atlantic City High School, where I went to high school. And there was like this international food festival that I recall, where like in the football field there was different kinds of food or something. But there was also a stage, and I guess since they're Asian, that's international. And so they threw them up there, and boy, was my Atlantic City High School class of 2002 riveted by these three guys dancing together, boy band style, in unison. And we do it in matching pink jackets.
You upped the ante.
You have to come see our
I will.
Our show.
I regret that I wasn't able to make it to the CD release party, but I am a member of your Facebook fan page.
I'll
and,
give you the details.
You're on our mailing list.
Yes,
yeah.
I am.
You're on our mailing.
That's the most important thing. We're in contact.
Good. Okay.
We would love for you to see how, because you saw us in really the beginning. We would love for you to see how far.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Because, like I said, you always seem to get a very good reaction, even from the very small crowds at Koji's.
We had a good run at Koji. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a shame that's no longer going on.
We've got a tight 30 now.
Yeah?
It's taken us a while to build. We got a tight 30 minutes.
Cool.
Of like you see on I'm pointing to a whiteboard where we have our material.
Mm-hmm.
That's our gold material top left there. And then we've got some rough material below that, all of which we perform. And then beyond that is like stuff that's in the developing stage that we want to get to performance.
So you've got, I would say, at least a half dozen titles there under the development stage.
Oh yeah.
You know, what do you think you need to do to them to move them up on the whiteboard? Like, how do you have a sense of when a song is ready?
We
write it. You should write it first.
Yes.
That's the first step, is write the actual song.
Exactly.
That's everything in the developing stage, that's not written. These are mostly ideas with like little hooks, little
pieces.
Except
Battlestar.
What's up? Oh, the Battlestar dance.
Is a choreography that we have to
do. That's an entire extra piece of art that we need to create on top of.
Everything else is a concept. We just like you have your iPod there, we all record stuff on our iPhones when we have a snippet of a song or a melody.
By we all, Ray. He does a good job at making sure we get all that down.
So then, now, Jay, you said that you had done stand-up.
Uh-huh.
Had you guys performed just as musicians in front of people, or like when you got together as a group, was that your first time performing?
That was basically my first time
and performing. Did you have any nerves in
comedy
that?
Or oh, and that one, yeah, I've had horrible nerves to get up. Not anymore. It's a lot easier now. But that first performance, I was 100% nervous. And then some of the bigger performances that we did after that, like the Viper Room, and we played the Lovitz at some point. The Lovitz in a,
oh, that's a good
Studio
club.
City. Yeah, it was on a weekend. It was pretty packed. And then we played, and then some of the bigger name stages, like when we played the Improv for the first time.
Oh, cool.
I was nervous on that one. I remember Dan usually looks at me and says, slow down. So
that's good advice in general.
Yeah. Time moves faster when you're on stage in a weird way.
It's the closest thing to time travel that I know of. Mm-hmm.
So then, Dan, I would imagine you were performing from a young age. Were you doing that in front of people, or was it just, you know, private lessons in the home with your family? Or...
That's a funny image, just like never performing. I have a button up all the way.
Yeah, you do.
The top. I've been playing in bands for a long time, since like middle school. I used to be in a lot of like, you know, angry suburban white kid bands, a lot of distorted guitars, a lot of, you know, headbanging and stuff. So I have some weird like random metal guitar chops that I don't really pull out that much.
We gotta see those.
Yeah, we'll pull them out someday. But yeah, I've been playing comedy is a different ball game though, for me. Learning to apply like comedic timing to a performance as opposed to just, you know, kind of being funny around people is a skill that I'm still honing currently, because it's a weird different kind of rhythm. I've always been, you know, with the music has to sometimes sit backseat to the comedy, which is something that I had to learn, I guess. But yeah, I've been performing for a while.
Well, I've had a mix of different kind of performers on. I've had musicians, I've had regular stage actors, I've had stand-ups. With the stand-ups, I usually like to ask if they have an amusing, like, hell gig story or a show where everything went wrong.
I think is this the time?
Are we all thinking the same thing?
I'm thinking about stand-up. What are you guys thinking about?
Oh, I was thinking about one of our shows.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, one of our shows.
Yeah.
I don't have a time limit on this, so if it's a good story, I'd love to hear it. Unless it's something that you don't want to talk about. Cause it's
I'll tell a little one. If Jay wants to tell a bigger one, that's... I leave that up to him because I think he would tell it best. But there was one time where we, in our miking days, played a coffee shop downtown. Mm-hmm. And we've always...
I don't understand what you mean by miking days.
Like open mic, doing open mics. Like we now luckily get to, like, we would still go play an open mic to work something out. But like people call us up and say, hey, do you want to play this show? And like that's usually how we play more. Or we've been producing our own shows lately. So
got it.
Like when we first started out, the only outlet we had for shows was open mics. And we don't probably play as much as a stand-up does, like need to work something out every day, but you know, we play with each other in a non-sexual musical comedy way,
and yet it's rather sexual.
Yet it's rather sexual. Yeah. It is a lot of dick jokes.
There's a musk in the room.
That musk is always there.
Yeah,
it's heavier today. So yeah, so in the open mic days, whenever we just find open mics from one of the lists online that are around LA, we went to a coffee shop before we lived downtown, I think, and it was at just like some kind of Starbucks or something, Starbucks.com, and there was nobody in the coffee shop. They didn't have like a PA. Like we have like backing tracks that we need to sing to, so it was all. The setup from the beginning was
hilarious. I just remembered what you're talking about. Yeah. I've been trying the whole time.
And I played a character. We've always incorporated sort of characters in our comedy. Mm-hmm. In our show, I played a character called the Rapist, whose main job, exactly, was to wear a ski mask and come into the audience and tell the audience that he was going to rape them. And then the weekend pilots on the stage, Jay and Dan, Ray was missing because, you know, where could he be? Their job was to defeat the rapist, save the audience, and then perform for them.
Right.
So I was out front.
Which I'll maintain to this day, because I caught a lot of slack from people about that. That is a positive message.
Uh-huh. The rapist always was defeated, by the way.
Yeah. We killed.
Anti-rape.
Murdered. Murdered. By guns. And like, yeah. As a bad guy, villain. And I think that people who were offended by it wouldn't acknowledge that. But that's definitely was part of it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you were definitely scary in the ski masks.
Thank you.
At the time, you had those hoops in your lip.
Yeah, I did have lip rings in. Yeah. Yeah. So there's two or three people on laptops, I think, in the audience. Basically, that's it. Uh-huh. And I'm outside, and there's like a security guard out there, and I'm putting on my raping mask, and I have a pea coat on, and I look in front of me, and I'm in front of just randomly in front of a ATM machine, and I'm just looking at the camera. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if anybody ever goes through that footage. And we'll wonder about how this robbery didn't happen. And then I walk in to the coffee shop and to the three people on laptops. I shout at them that I'm going to rape them. And then we proceed to do the show. Which basically, I wouldn't call it a bomb because nobody was paying attention. But except the baristas really loved it.
Oh, yeah, actually, well, we didn't bomb, in my opinion. I've bombed before as a stand-up. I don't think the Weekend Pilots have ever bombed. I have context for what it feels like to bomb.
Yeah.
I've bombed. I don't think we've ever done it yet. But everyone bombs, so we will. And you guys will get to feel what that's like.
In a similar vein, we played a show in New Jersey for Jay's family.
Oh.
And Jay is a very, because he comes from a theater background and says that the show must always go on. Our format at the time, I think 15 minutes, we were doing like a 15-minute show, was that the rapist came out. So all of Jay's family were at this show in New Jersey at a bookstore, where his dad, who is also from a musical background, was playing with his band, High Treason.
That's awesome, because that's the name of my dad's band from like the 70s. So
what were they called?
Okay. No.
Okay.
High Treason.
Wait a minute now. We're going to promote Sears, and we're going to promote Facebook and Starbucks, but we can't plug your dad's band.
No. High Treason. That's my dad's. My dad's band. There's this picture of my dad from like way back in the day, and he's got a fro that would rival like my fro.
It was
like,
pretty epic.
It's an epic fro, and he's standing with his band, and he just looks like a total badass. They all do. It's an awesome picture. And that's how
our dads would have been fro bros for real.
Yeah. My dad also has a fro. I'm gonna show you guys some pictures.
This explains it.
Oh, the secret.
What are we talking about?
Oh, so at this show, that's basically Jay's father has invited us to play like a peace love sort of show with him, and so he gets to with a great moment for the Schultz family. Like Jay gets to play a show with his dad, like really cool moment. And at this bookstore, this very alternative bookstore, great place. What is the name of the bookstore? Jay's entire family, like generations of his family, have shown up. In particularly, many older members of his family, grandmothers, grandfathers, great aunts. And I am in the back of this bookstore putting on my rape mask, just terrified to go out. And I'm like, Jay, do you sure?
I told you I would do it.
I'm going to say this, right?
I told you I would do it instead of you. I told you if you weren't comfortable that I would do it.
I'm going to say this. I was pushed to write material that was dirtier and racier and edgier and more emotional than I would have written on my own. They pushed me to write that material. And as a fellow performer, I supported them on stage through it. But if you're going to write it, you should be able to put it in front of your family. Yeah. And if you can't, then then I'm hiding behind something. And unfortunately for me, my family has been unamused by my comedy for many years. So I already know that my grandmom doesn't think anything I do is funny. That experience did prompt me actually to study clowning. And that summer I studied clowning, and I wanted to try to create something that was more universal that my family could appreciate, like my nieces as well as my grandparents. And unfortunately, like, no one made it to that show. So it was a one-night-only event. So nobody ever saw that. My nieces were there. They loved it.
Yeah. I told Jay's grandparents that I was going to rape them.
Oh, no.
It was a moment. It was a thing. I'll say this. A couple of my cousins were there. And
they loved it.
And it was an insane moment for that to all be going on, for my friend to be screaming that he was going to rape my grandparents,
your entire family,
and the rest basically of my family. It's a crazy thing, but there were a few people there who appreciated its insanity. And so, again, we didn't bomb, in my opinion. That wasn't a bomb. It was a crazy show. It was a show that you might have seen on, like, Late Night with Zach or something. It's he might have done something like that. Yeah. It was intense. That was our East Coast tour. That was our first ever, like, tour outside of L.A. performing.
But if you're talking absolute worst show.
Okay. That wasn't it at all.
That was not it?
None of those. Those are all memories. Absolute worst show would be having played the Comedy Store recently.
Ah. That's not even what I was thinking
of. I was thinking of that.
Yeah, let's round the Comedy Store.
Okay.
We made a decision.
I have no objection to that.
We made a decision recently based on just some of our experience at the, I don't know what you would call them, more kind of old school venues of comedy.
I'm going to say this. Comedy clubs are dirty, disgusting, soulless, horrible places. Comedy clubs. And there are exceptions to that. And there are comedy clubs that are rad, you know, and mostly they're not in L.A. I think that the Improv out here is cool. I still love performing there and would love to perform there again. I've had fun there. But the Comedy Store is the worst of them, of the ones that's like considered this great place of comedy. It's not. There's nothing going on there. It's a horrible place. It's a place where they force people to pay large covers and then uncomfortably make them buy 2-drink minimums to sit through shows that are too long with too many comedians on them until they're all uncomfortable and want to leave.
Yep. Too many comedians doing too little time for their own good.
Yeah.
To develop the art form.
Someone threw us up on a show and they didn't even have the host say anything before us. They put us on like before the host.
And we brought a good number of people with us to see the show.
They did us the favor of lying to us about it being free and then having the host forget our name when he did go on after us.
They did us
the favor of doing that.
We looked on their website of what the show cost and it was a free show and we invited a bunch of people and a bunch of people came out, which by the way,
20 to 30 people.
Comedy venue.
Good turnout.
If a performer is bringing that many people to your venue, kiss their feet and thank them. Don't be horrible to them. We found out the show was way too much money for our friends. They like literally
like a $15 show. Oh, it was ridiculous.
With 2-drink minimum.
Yeah, that's
and so it was ridiculous. They put us on first. They gave us
first before the host.
1.333 infinity of a song we got to play. One third of a song.
They lit us at about 3 minutes, 30 seconds or something like that after telling me that if we were going first, we could do like a little more time than we would have, which was six, which even to come out for six is rough.
The waiters were still in the crowd ordering drinks. The host hadn't come on stage.
Yeah, we got the work.
No one was ready to perceive anything that was happening on stage. Our friends were still outside trying to figure out why the show.
By the time we were off stage, we heard the host say something like, he was like, "All right, that was weird. I don't know what that was. Let's have the real show start." And it was like, "Wow, thanks guys for including us in your happy-go-lucky fun times night here."
And we were very excited to play that show. Like, we were very excited to be at the Comedy Store.
I haven't had great experiences there. I find that like a lot of clubs, they haven't decided if they want to be in the comedy business or the drink selling business.
They're selling drinks.
Yeah.
They care way more about selling drinks at the Comedy Store than they do about putting on a quality comedy show.
I agree.
If we want to see a good show, or be on a good show for that matter, it's like go to an independently produced show. That there's plenty of them around LA that are great.
It's a lot
that
of
are
good shows.
That are free. The Downtown Independent Theater show, the Holy Fuck show, the Dave Ross, great free show.
Yeah.
Places like Tiger, the great free show, they're all around. Or UCB, like we all have studied UCB, Jay the most. Like those are people that are doing comedy correct, and we've just started to produce our own shows.
Comedy correct, that sounds good.
Right. Comedy correct.
You should get that domain name.
I'm by right now, comedycorrect.com. I'll have it by the time you get
there. We'll buy PSAs and shit.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't remember. I'm very sure it's our
memory. Well, with that in mind, then, where are you guys going to be performing soon? Where can people come see you? We're doing this the second week in October, so.
Oh, great.
You know, Halloween's coming up.
If you get it out before October 19th, October 19th, we're producing a comedy music show in downtown LA area at a place called the Five Stars Bar on Main Street. It'll be us.
Five Stars Bar on Main Street.
Oh, okay.
Five Stars Bar on Main Street.
267 Main Street.
October 19th.
Playing with Ogre Mage. Good friends we discussed earlier.
I've heard good things about them.
They're excellent. And Tardo Control, another comedy band, and a really, really interesting format that they do. And Megan Hunshaw, who's a friend that we met in the comedy world who plays guitar and has some amazing songs.
Oh, cool.
So it'll be a night of comedy music. Be a first for us of producing a night of comedy music.
Nice. Yeah, so. And then so your online presence, you're at theweekendpilots.com.
Yes.
You have a Facebook fan page. You have individual pages for yourselves. Are you guys on Twitter?
Live. We are on Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at weekendpilots. No room for that.
It's got to be a little shorter.
Right.
No room Twitter. For that. But yeah, hit us up on Twitter. We like the Twitter.
Cool.
Twitter's good for us.
How about a YouTube channel? Can people see videos?
Heck yes.
You're all over the place?
Get this, youtube.com/theweekendpilots.
So there is a the there.
Get the definite article back in.
Oh, it's there.
Okay.
If you just Google Weekend Pilots or The Weekend Pilots, you'll find us all over the place.
Well, let me ask you this then. What was the origin of the name? Why did you pick The Weekend Pilots?
Ooh, good question, Dave.
Yeah. I wanted to throw you a little curveball. You know, people hear the plugs, they think things are wrapping up.
I thought it was over.
I had one more meaty, you know, après.
It's ready to relax.
Anyway.
Look, Dave, you're a comedian. You don't have to necessarily come up with a new name for yourself.
I have considered it just because of how often my own name gets mispronounced.
You don't necessarily have to. As a band, you really have to come up with a name.
It's a process.
And it's not easy to do. Mm. It was difficult. And ultimately, we just went with what was on a t-shirt.
Oh, okay. So it was a t-shirt you found somewhere? Or?
It was a t-shirt that already existed in our lives.
I see.
Yeah, which said Weekend Pilot.
Okay.
Singular.
And to me, the Weekend Pilots represents... Weekend Pilots were people who... when aviation was first becoming possible for just a regular dude and you wanted to pick it up as a hobby. That was your hobbyist and that's your hobby.
It's a hell of a hobby.
You're going to get in a plane. You're going to have your 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, but you're going to get in a plane on the weekend and you're going to explore the skies, right. This unknown world where no human has been able to explore before. And I find that within these two guys, much like myself, we like to do a little bit of exploring, you know, the imagination of these other kind of worlds that we like to joke around and dance around in with each other. And so if the image of us sort of like floating away on a bench that's tied to too many balloons could sort of take someone else to that place with us, you know, where we welcome them into that world, that's what the Weekend Pilots is to me.
That's inspiring, actually.
I'm glad you liked it.
I did, very much so.
You want to be in the band? Or?
All I play is the jaw harp, so I don't...
I didn't play anything when I joined the band, so...
But this has been terrific. Thank you so much for having me here in your home. And,
thank you.
You know, I encourage all of my listeners to check you guys out. You won't be disappointed.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah. Thank you. So one last question, answer please. Your panties were the main dish. What would be the side dish? If your panties were the main dish, what would be the side dish? If your panties were the main dish, what would be the side dish? If your panties were the main dish, what would be the side dish? If your panties were the main dish, what would be the side dish? If your panties were the main dish, what would be the side dish? Panties were the main dish. A lobster bisque. Panties were the main dish.